Hello, my name is Wayne Jones. Welcome to Three More Minutes About Sam. This week's episode is called Sam's Health. And I'm going to be talking a little bit about Sam Johnson's health throughout his life, but not very much actually, just sort of touch on a few points. Mostly what I wanted to talk about is basically how I'm putting this book together and sort of my compositional style, how I managed to sort of wrangle the research and sort of get, you know, to, there's lots, so much out there, how I managed to get sort of a ton of information, and how do you get that down to a book that you hope will be probably in the 200s numbers of pages. So first I did want to say a little bit about Sam's health though. At the beginning he had a kind of a hard birth, so to speak. He was born with scrofula, which is it's a kind of a nasty sounding name, and actually for a nasty disease as well. It's basically an infection in the lymph nodes that causes inflammation. So, and he had them on they're around the neck. So you'd end up, this infection would cause them to basically become a lot larger than they were. And the way they were treated back in the 18th century was that they were, whatever, lanced or incisions, you know, cut off, basically. And what that left him with was, I mean, it sort of cures him, so to speak, but what it left him with was a lot of scarring. So, I mean, it sort of is a very disfiguring thing that he had, on his neck for the rest of his life. One curious thing about it is that the disease, at least back then, was also called the King's Evil. And it was thought that if the person suffering from the King's Evil could be touched by a member of royalty, then they would be cured of it. Sounds crazy. Is crazy, basically, when you think about it, unless they have some magic that most humans don't have. So at the age of about 2.5, actually, Sam, as a baby, as a kid, was taken and was touched by Queen Anne, and was not cured, but he was touched. He did go through that ritual of being touched by the queen, by the member of royalty. So that's what he had. That's what he was born with. Those are some of the that's just one example of the things from his birth. At his death, sort of the other end of things, the main thing is that as I'm actually just doing more reading into this now, and I've got the research, but I haven't read up on all the exquisite details. But he did have a good long period during, in the last year or so, I think, but certainly as in one of the books I'm reading, in the last 3 weeks, where he was basically confined to bed and was basically, you know, on his deathbed dying, and there were friends that were visiting and that sort of thing. And that's how he died, basically, with at the time, you know, when he was there, there was a certain group of friends that just happened to be there when he took his last breath. So he was in pretty serious condition and realized that he was dying. So The thing that catches me about that is that he was a person who, during the course of his life, expressed a lot of fear of death in a certain way, or not wanting to die. And perhaps more importantly, or maybe more germanely, he was afraid of going to hell. I mean, he believed in God and in his religion in that way. And since he was so self-cascatory, since he criticized himself so much, he was always worried that he wasn't good enough, and that if he were to die, then he wouldn't receive the favor of God, the graces of God, and therefore would be sent packing down to hell. So that's interesting. I'm not meaning to be frivolous about it at all, but I mean, that's what he believed. So just think about that in that kind of combination, where someone thinks that they're not good enough to go to heaven, and yet they're dying. What that must feel like. During the course of Sam's life, what's most noticeable, I mean, he led a pretty robust life in a lot of ways. And he went on trips, he was out, at the clubs all the time, talking and arguing and that sort of thing. Went on a very, very long trip to the western islands of Scotland, to the Hebrides, later in life. So he was a pretty robust person. He was a big man. And so you don't sort of read so much about the physical ailments, but you read a lot about, and you know a lot about the mental ailments, basically the anxiety and depression especially. That's the ailment that he suffered from mostly during that time. So I want to talk a little bit about my method of bringing together all the information, all the research, everything I know, and a lot of what other people know about Sam Johnson. And how do you bring all that together into a book? You know, if you can imagine just, Johnson is certainly not someone who's been subject to as much scholarship as Shakespeare. No one has, basically, but he's been subject to a lot of scholarship and there's been lots of biographies written. There's lots of information to be had. So I just wanted to say a little bit about how I've gone about choosing my topics, basically. So I've read, I've been an amateur of studying Sam Johnson for many decades now, and now I'm writing this biography of him. And I say amateur in the sense that I'm not a professor. I don't have a PhD in English literature or anything like that. I have an MA on Johnson, but amateur in the sense of loving Johnson, and also in the sense of, not ever being professionally employed in, doing scholarship about Johnson. So I don't mean it to put myself down or anything like that. So I knew a lot to start with, and I also knew some of the topics that I wanted to cover in more detail. And I also wanted to cover some topics that either didn't get covered enough, or in by other biographies that I'd read, for example, or didn't get covered in the fashion that I would have liked to have seen them covered. And some of those, three of the main ones there are, frankly, Johnson's sex life. I'm not talking in a prurient way here about that, but just the fact of it. I mean, he was a man who was married for a while, and then a man who was single for a longer while. And, what happened? What did he do? That sort of thing. I find that interesting. I think that's an interesting thing to know about him. The other thing, or another thing, is Johnson's writing style. And this is something that a lot of scholars and writers have written about, and it's something that I've always been quite fascinated in myself. I definitely want to cover some of that. I knew that I wanted to cover some of that in the biography that I would write. And the other thing I wanted to do was to, I'm specifically writing this book for the general reader. So this is not a book designed for, as I've mentioned maybe too many times here, this is not a book that's being written for other scholars. This is a book that's being written for the general reader, for the person who may have heard of Sam Johnson, for the person who may have heard about the dictionary, for the person who may have read essays from the Rambler, from the person who may have read Boswell and read the life story and been interested in that way. So that's who I'm writing for. And so one of the things I knew that I wanted to include in the book is a sense of what it was like to live in the 18th century generally. Now, I wasn't planning, and am not planning, to write a complete social history of the 18th century, but I do plan to bring in details about how transportation worked or how people lived and that sort of thing. Again, not covering these things in exquisite detail as a lot of very admirable scholars have done, but enough so that people get a taste of things. Often when someone, you know, is not familiar with a century, it's really hard to sort of picture how things were, you know, what kind of pants did people wear, that sort of thing. Again, not meaning to be frivolous about it, but the bottom line, to make a long story short, I'm planning to incorporate those kinds of details. And the way I've gone about the research is to, I've read a lot. Books, biographies, articles. But another thing I've done, which you generally don't see, for example, in scholarly monographs or scholarly biographies of any writer, is that I've interviewed professors. I've interviewed scholars about various topics, ranging from things about Johnson to things about 18th century society to things about Johnson and Shakespeare to things about David Garrick and Shakespeare, all sorts of things. And one thing I wanted to say is that those scholars have been really, really generous of their time, for someone who just sort of reaches out for them like that. Most of them I've done over the phone. Some of them I've done in person. And I think some of them, yes, I know some of them, I've done by email as well. So I've gathered a lot of information in that way, and that's been really useful for me and something I plan to take advantage of and incorporate into the book in some way. So what I've done then, when I had all this sort of massive information and I had a general sense of what I wanted to include, I feel very strongly for any nonfiction book that anyone is writing, and I suppose depending on what kind of fiction one is talking about, perhaps it applies to fiction as well, but certainly for nonfiction, a very, very important thing is the order in which one lays out the information and in which one lays out the life. So I have been very careful about setting out the table of contents, so to speak, and where things would be situated. And that's basically what I've been working from. So once I established my table of contents and once I knew what I was going to be writing about, I then basically took the research I'd done, reviewed everything, and then sort of put it in the appropriate chapter, just in its raw form and unwritten, basically. And then the idea is to, or has been, to go back and write the chapter, to use what I have to write my words and also, to cite my sources, that sort of thing. And that's been the idea. So that's what I have now. That's the text I work with when I call it up to write it. When I'm doing writing on it, I call it up and it's all fully arranged right from the half title page right down to the acknowledgments. It's got the full panoply of what's in a book. And that's how I like to have things. I like to sort of feel that I have a structure first before I sort of start in. Like I couldn't imagine, and other writers might do it in different ways, but I couldn't imagine just sort of, just banging out a bunch of stuff and then saying, oh, I'll get that citation later, and making a note here and then having a sticky note over there. That's just not how I work, nor how I live either. I'm extremely organized, and that's very useful, I think, for someone who's writing a biography, because it contributes on both ends. It means that you won't forget the details if everything works out well. And it also means that in the macro sense, you have a sense of the whole, basically, before you start. So that's been very useful. And the other thing that I do, and I know that some writers write like this, and I know that some writers do not write like this. The other thing I do is that when I write, if you could imagine, for example, that I'm working on chapter 3, and with chapter 3, I've got a bunch of you know, raw bits of research that I've done, or maybe some notes I've made to myself, that sort of thing. Perhaps even some brainstorming stuff that I put in the chapter. So it's all sort of, you know, basically what I do is I put a, you know, a lump here, I separate it with a line of X's, I put another lump, separate it. But I know that it's all going into the same chapter. So then you sort of, I sort of review all that and start writing. And the way I write is, I call it the sort of the combine harvester method. You know, if you think of a combine harvester as something that goes across a field and it just steadily goes on and it leaves things behind, it leaves a, if you imagine the trail as being the groomed writing, so to speak, it leaves that behind. So what I mean by that, and just occurring to me, that may not be the best analogy, but what I mean by that is that when I write sentences down and when I go from sentence to sentence and then from a group of sentences, which would be a paragraph, to the next paragraph, those need to be, you know, almost what I would consider finished before I move on. So that's the way I work. And then when I go back, what it generally means is that I have very little revision to do. And when I say that, for example, about going from paragraph to paragraph, you know, I do my documentation, I do everything so that it's sort of quote unquote finished. That certainly does not mean that I won't be reviewing it later, nor does it mean that I won't be getting a professional editor to have a look through it as well. Those things will happen, but that's how I write. And that works well for me, and that's sort of what I go with. So the state that the book is in now, basically, is that some chapters have been, if you consider that finished, have been finished in that way, are done, you know, annotated, completely written, no problem. Other chapters still have the lumps in there, you know, they have the brainstorm bit and the bit I pulled from another author, all separated by lines of X's, basically. And those need to be, you know, what I would call written. I need to write those. I still have ones like that as well. So that will still take some time. What I'm aiming for is next year to basically publish the book. And the other thing I'm aiming for, well, maybe I'll say two things. One thing, which is obvious if you're listening to this, is that the other thing I've been doing is not, you know, the idea is not to document my process or anything like that, but as a kind of a complement with an E to what I've been doing, I've lately been podcasting about Sam Johnson and about the biography I'm writing, but I've also been blogging for close to 2 years now about the book as well. So I've got a very, very fully developed website called mysamjohnson.com. My Sam Johnson, by the way, is going to be the title of the book. And what I'll probably end up doing, I've been thinking about this just this morning, I was thinking about this. What I'll probably end up doing is transforming that website into basically a kind of a supplement to the book. So, for example, what I would see would be that the book would be published. It would be certainly readable completely on its own, but that the website would act as a complement. You know, it would be a place, for example, where I might put a lot more photographs, for example, either, you know, photographs that I've taken myself or photographs that I couldn't find a place for in the book or something like that. It might be a place where I put some of the interviews, you know, with the permissions of the interviewees, of course. And it might be a place where I put a bunch of other stuff that, you know, for the, if this is not a contradiction in terms, for the hardcore general reader who wanted some information or wanted to see some of the background, that's what I plan to basically transform this current website into. For now, I'm using it to house a bunch of other information. That's where you can or one of the places you can find this podcast, and that's one of the that's the place where I do my blog. But in the end, to summarize, basically next year sometime, I'm hoping, planning, that I will have the book published, and that there will also be a website available that will complement the book in some way, so that people will sort of have both things. And part of it is just to sort of make a full picture. Picture is an important word here because, you know, photos are important. And there are ones that I've taken myself, for example, on various trips I've made to London and to Oxford and to Lichfield, which is where Sam Johnson was born. Even though they're of modern day, it turns out, for example, if you go to Lichfield, you know, there's a lot of things there that are dedicated to Sam Johnson, and if one takes a photo, one is in effect taking a photo of you know, something from a couple of hundred years ago. So that's my plan, and I'm working as hard as I can to sort of get it done. And it's something I really enjoy enormously. You know, the inspiration for all this, or in a certain way, was when I was doing my BA honors in English at Memorial University in the, it would have been either the late 1970s or the early 1980s. It must have been a survey course that included the 18th century. And one of my teachers was a man named Patrick O'Flaherty, and he was very enthusiastic about Samuel Johnson. And that's, I had never heard of Samuel Johnson before then. And that's basically what, where it all started, so to speak. I was just in my early 20s then, hard to imagine. But that's what kind of started everything. And I went on then to, as I mentioned, I did a Master of Arts in English and did my thesis on Sam Johnson at the University of Toronto a couple of years later. And since then, I mean, basically my career has been as a professional librarian, but I've been keeping up with Sam Johnson. You know, I've certainly, I would say doubtlessly, not kept up as a full scholar would do, as a professor would do, but I've certainly read the biographies, and I've read articles and those sorts of things. And in the course of doing the book, of course, I've had to do a lot more of that, you know, sort of go back and, you know, pick out the things I've missed, so to speak. That's been very necessary. So anyway, that's my plan. That's where the book is. And I'm looking forward to 2022. And then I have to think of what my next book will be. And that's it for this week. I really thank you very much for listening. It's nice to have you out there. I'll talk to you again in a week or so. And if you're ever looking for this podcast, you can find it, as they say, wherever you get your podcasts. So thanks for listening. We'll talk again next week.